Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday afternoon. The American Federation of Teachers and AFT's Milwaukee Technical College Federation Local 212 are sponsoring a forum today looking at the growing crisis of mounting student debt and skyrocketing tuition. It will feature the, and is featuring at the moment that we're speaking, the president of the American Federation of Teachers, Randy Weingarten, who will join us during this hour a little bit later. And we'll also begin the hour with a guest who's been with us before. He's just changed the places where he is. Steve Correa is our guest. He's the department chair now of education for St. Catherine University of St. Paul, Minnesota. Prior to that, he was the associate professor of education for St. Norbert College in De Pere, and he studied the history of school reform efforts over the past 100 years. This student loan thing is huge. It's a $1 trillion problem in this country. 40 million Americans are saddled with student debt, and in the state of Wisconsin, 753,000 students still owe on their loans. Why is that the case? And one thing I've always wondered about is we were looking at that Scottish election, which I stayed up and watched the results because they were so intriguing. They really wanted to make sure that college education was free. How is it that so many other countries in the world have college be so much less expensive than it is here in the United States? I know many of you listening have taken out loans. I know many people who have been paying off student loans for years and years and years after they get into the job market, and it's hardly a way to start your life with all this debt, right? So we'll be welcoming phone calls. We're interested in hearing your experience. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we are on Twitter as well, and that's @KDunnShow. Professor Steve Correa, nice to talk to you again. Hi.
Oh, nice to be here. And hello back.
Yeah, you're in Minnesota now.
Yes, I am. How about that?
Is it snowing? It's not snowing.
Well, it is a cold, rainy day over here in St. Paul. So coming your way, I do believe.
Thanks so much.
Oh, yeah.
So glad to hear that. You know, I was following these Scottish elections and looking at the cost of education. Can you tell me why it is that there are some countries that can offer college almost free, and that in many other countries, the cost is just so much less than it is in America? Why is that?
Well, you know, usually, as with most things, kind of peeling an onion, it's on the surface, it does appear that a lot of European universities, and by the way, this also goes with Mexico or Australia, are not just cheaper, but significantly, and in some cases, jaw-droppingly less expensive.
Hmm.
It's important to understand that the experiences aren't necessarily analogous. And here's one of the classic example. There is an accord that European universities have all assigned called the Bologna Accord. And the short version of it is, the bachelor's degree in Europe among these signees, which is basically the EU countries, it's a three-year degree. So college is much shorter there than here.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I can guarantee you that none of those students are trooping over to their version of Camp Randall Stadium on Saturday to see this university-sponsored, funded and resource-driven sports activity that's community-based. Colleges don't offer that array of social activities. Mm. Those are all community-based. So, you know, the classroom's analogous. The experience of higher education, no. Now, the other part to this, though, and there might be some listeners out there that perhaps even have experienced this. And well,
sure.
It'd be great to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that the debt burden in Sweden, though Sweden's tuition is markedly lower than the United States, is actually not hugely different
really?
Than the United States?
Huh.
And the reason is they still have to live. They still have to eat. They still have to drive a car or public transportation. They still have to pay for books.
Mm-hmm.
They still have computer fees. And it's the ratio that's the important thing to think about, because incomes are lower, But the debt, while, you know, we may say, oh, only $20,000. Well, when the average yearly income may be only $35,000 or so, that's a chunk. So, you know, it's a way to be able to compare that. So there is some more government support, clearly. It is a shorter experience, but they still do have debt at European universities, and it is a burden there, too. Maybe that gets us back to the introduction, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, what about this three-year? Do you think that most of us could complete college in 3 years and have a valuable experience? Are we stretching it out?
Well, I haven't talked to a first-year student yet who hasn't thought that.
Right.
Usually seniors, sometimes they pause and find, benefits to it. Certainly the thought of summers off and that three-month break, I mean, those kind of things. But what they did in essence was really streamline the bachelor's degree and said, what is it that we specifically want these undergraduates to be able to do? Now, one of the problems is European degreed students coming into the States, there's not an automatic, oh, you can be welcome to our graduate program, because American universities have not embraced this universally. And so it's made for some interesting wrinkles, some of that right there in Madison. However, they decided that trimming this experience with the commensurate cost was more important than sending this out. Now, of course, I bet you that very few listeners know 10 people that graduated in 4 years.
Right.
Unless it's
absolutely
from 25 years ago.
Right.
Yeah. And as I myself, I have a high school junior, my son, I'm encouraging him to look at schools that have high four-year graduation rates, which he usually comes back and says, Dad, these places charge more tuition than you make a year.
Mm.
And, of course, places like Carleton, Beloit, these really prestigious schools, my old employer, wonderful college, St. Norbert College, they have strong four-year graduation rates. St. Norbert's was the highest in the state.
Really, was it?
About 82%.
Oh, that's great.
That's a good number. That's impressive. But tuition is higher than at UW-Madison. Maybe, though, if you compute in you're done in 4 years versus five or perhaps a little bit more than five, maybe it's not that much expensive, not that much more expensive, and you're making money.
Right.
In that fifth year, you're not paying out money. That's why it is an important issue, but it is a case where not all things are equal because they're trying to provide these experiences and the growth, the liberal arts versus the technical college. But degree, you know, those, the expense with college, wow.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you mentioned the football field and all of the associated costs, certainly the coaches, and this is true of a lot of public institutions and private institutions around the country. Has that really made costs skyrocket, or have we made too much of that?
Oftentimes what happens is, Madison's program's great. I'm an Ohio State and Penn State graduate. They have football programs that occasionally find themselves on the news. The football programs pay for themselves. They do.
Mm-hmm.
However, they also pay for a lot of other programs. Now, universities do that because it attracts students. It is a way to build camaraderie. Alumni associations love it. there's lots of pieces to those things. But people have been trying to drill down to be able to say, why is it so expensive? Of course, they ask this about healthcare. Or if you've gone out to buy a car lately, why is this so expensive? And it's certainly not salaries on a college campus. Those have barely kept pace with inflation, and in some cases they haven't. It is that whole host, that constellation of expenses that colleges and universities have assumed. Their you know, aging physical facilities. And Kathleen, I'm not sure, did you have air conditioning in your dorm when you went to college?
Are you kidding? No.
Yeah, where I stayed was built the same year Theodore Roosevelt was inaugurated, which was also the last time it was cleaned. But, you know, the idea was there's a generation of college students coming that do have expectations.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, euphemistically called the arms race, and it's like armchairs and all these other kind of things. So there's a certain expectation of luxury might not be the right word to say, but geez, sometimes it's not too far off. You have to have the university look good, the campus, you know, on and on. And these are, in Madison's case, what, 45,000 person communities.
Mm-hmm.
So they're very, very expensive. And then the liberal arts colleges, Beloit, Lawrence, you know, on and on, Northland, which that wonderful view of Lake Superior, they are trying to compete, and they have to find that niche to be able to get students to come there. So housing, food, you know, all these other kind of things. So it's really this whole menu of expenses. And a wonderful little book that I would recommend people read is Freakonomics. And the Freakonomics argument is college has gotten expensive because there's more loan money available to pay for it. We have borrowed, people have loan money, therefore that drives up demand. Therefore, colleges are able to make it more difficult to get into, higher demand. And it's this interesting cycle of the money has fueled access, and access has fueled demand. And therefore, then you get this odd thing where tuition is being raised, and a larger portion of the tuition being raised is going to pay for student aid because the tuition is so
high.
Oh, and if it's anybody that's read Catch 22, there's your answer.
There, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's take some phone calls. We have a couple coming in. We're welcoming phone calls. We're talking about student debt and related subjects this hour of the program. And our guest, the first part of the show, is Steve Correa. He is now Department Chair of Education for St. Catherine University at St. Paul, Minnesota. He was at St. Norbert in De Pere for a number of years. Later in the hour, the president of the 1.6 million member American Federation of Teachers, Randy Weingarten, will join us. Let's start our calls with Richard in Viroqua. Hi, Richard. Hi, Richard.
Hey, what's up? I just want to say I have two college degrees. I'm back in school because in 2008 the job I had was gone.
Oh.
That's how long it took me to get back into school. I'm at one of the technical colleges here in Wisconsin, and I'm shocked to find out that the Wisconsin Technical College graduation rate's only 39%.
That really?
61% of the kids that are coming out of Wisconsin schools are leaving with nothing but debt. I'm in a program that's going to train me to be a healthcare worker. I don't want to say what program or anything. And I don't understand why I'm going to go work for a company or a hospital. Why don't they pay for my training? Why do I have to go into debt to be trained to get a job? You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I get it.
I don't understand the exorbitant costs of school, especially, for example, something simple like a textbook. I'll give you a quick, this is what happened to me story. I took anatomy physiology class. The textbook was $250.
Right. I know.
Okay? I sent away to Taiwan to get a $90 textbook that
mm-hmm.
was the same textbook used in this class.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that crazy?
It is crazy. I have a son in college.
I
know what you're talking about. Why is it? I mean, it makes a valid point. Why don't companies pay at least a good chunk of the training, Professor Correa?
Well, some do. And the challenge, of course, is, you know, whether it's fortuitous timing or whatever, but some of those places do. Of course, these are going to be in exceptionally high demand areas or for employees that have demonstrated some particular value to the place. But there are employers that do that. I'm not going to be able to pull any right out, but there's lots of documentation of that. Healthcare, though, is a very decentralized program, decentralized system, and so perhaps there are some places that do that, but again, it's getting into that pipeline and finding out. The textbook prices, by the way, for Richard, you could not get five faculty members together and not get 10 voices saying that they agree with you even
Well, what is that all about? They're exorbitantly expensive.
Well, you know, the natural sciences, this is just a classic case. Librarians have begun to finally say enough is enough with a journal subscription that perhaps 10 years ago was $2,500 a year. That's now $25,000 a year. And they've just said enough is enough. And there's various things to do. I suppose my old colleague at St. Norbert College, Kevin Quinn, could argue this. But, you know, welcome to the world of capitalism. They charge it because they can. They can argue it has expenses. But certainly it's a very profitable enterprise for some groups.
Yeah. Well, all the best to you, Richard.
To say, if we don't forgive the debt and stop using our kids as credit cards, whatever the reason, things are going to get worse. Things aren't going to get better. You know, I don't see myself as getting a job, $48,000 a year, and having to pay $20,000 in student loan debt. It's just going to get worse. I don't think people really understand that. We seem to have plenty of money for drones and bombs to kill brown children in other countries. We don't seem to have plenty of money for the necessities to create a civilized country where kids can go out, they can get a job after they graduate from college.
Professor Correa.
Well, one thing I'd like to do is go back to one of the things that was shared before. Graduation rates are an appropriate measure, but you have to decide where you're going to look at that graduation rate. A lot of the technical schools are concerned about that particular measure because they may be people there just for to get a particular skill or to upgrade a skill or to get, you know, some particular snapshot of something. So degree completion isn't always analogous with a successful educational experience.
Mm-hmm.
So, That doesn't apply for the technical schools. The other one, Richard certainly echoes a lot of people's views about this is nuts. and then other people would say, welcome to a capitalist system where the strongest are going to be able to survive. And it's really this view, and isn't this what's happened in Wisconsin the last few years?
Mm-hmm.
It's really this view. What is the role of government? Is it opportunity? What's the benchmark or what's the floor level of expectation for support and availability? And it's been answered one way in Wisconsin. It's been answered another way in other states. And so, you know, that's the political parties represent this, and that's, of course, why in Europe it is more heavily subsidized. Again, it's not free totally, but they decided to make that more of that social contract availability. And here it's one that the individual initiative is shown to be able to access that education.
Thank you, Richard, for your call. Connie in Madison, hi.
Hi, two quick points to what your guest just said. We've shifted away from the notion that an educated workforce is a public good, and we've privatized the risk of going to school such that 18-year-olds are taking on what even a 45-year-old experienced person would find to be a breathtaking amount of debt in an entrepreneurial venture where the numbers could be determined in advance. It is not, it should not be a single family or a single kid's decision whether or not we have a world competitive educated workforce. And at one time we actually saw that as a public good in the time of the GI Bill. The other quick point I want to make is that somebody has to be a grown-up on these campuses, because if what the kids are getting used to are luxury swimming pools, gorgeous suites, beautiful furniture, extraordinary facilities for their recreational sports and so on, their gyms, and then they emerge into the world and cannot even manage to find an apartment that they can afford, we are lying to them, and we are pandering to something that is so unrealistic. If you can't be poor while you're a student, when,
right.
how on earth are you going to face being the kind of poor you are? I see people with these debts and the regret that it brings them when they can't buy houses or they can't find the ability to pay for a car because their student loans are so overwhelming.
Yeah, so, great points. Thanks, Connie.
And so well spoken.
Mm-hmm.
I think, yes, she brings up a wonderful point. You know, that's the origin of the Wisconsin idea. And of course, Wisconsin Public Radio has always been the embodiment of that. Connie is probably familiar with this. Some of the other listeners may find they want to go back to, now here's a voice from the past, a name from the past, Alan Dershowitz.
Mm-hmm. I remember Alan.
Our favorite voices from Harvard wrote a piece recently about the shame of elite, isolated, upper-class youth being replicated in Ivy League institutions and never having an idea about what the world is like. And so while I think it's a far cry between one of those and, say, a student going to a state school, it does tell us that the burdens, and by the way, they can't get rid of this debt. Bankruptcy doesn't get rid of college debt, so it's sticking with you.
Yeah, something's got to give. Thank you so much, and I'm glad you're in Minnesota, and I'm glad we found you. And thank you, Professor Correa, for being with us.
Wonderful to be found, and I'm sure we'll be in touch again.
I'm sure we will.
Bye.
Professor Steve Correa. He's the Department Chair of Education for St. Catherine University at St. Paul, Minnesota. We know him for many years as Associate Professor of Education for St. Norbert College in De Pere, Wisconsin. The American Federation of Teachers and AFT's Milwaukee Technical College Federation Local 212 had a forum today looking at the growing crisis of mounting student debt and skyrocketing tuition. And it featured the president of the American Federation of Teachers, Randy Weingarten, who will join us in just a moment on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Randy Weingarten is our guest now, president of the 1.6 million member American Federation of Teachers. AFL-CIO represents teachers, paraprofessionals, school-related personnel, higher education faculty and staff, nurses, and other healthcare professionals, local, state, and federal government employees, and early childhood educators. Randy is, as I said, in Milwaukee for a meeting on mounting student debt and really high tuition. It took place at MATC and was just wrapping up. Randy, thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And, you know, it was just, I just have to say, I've been in two places where we represent members in Milwaukee today, the Milwaukee VA Medical Center, where we represent the nurses, and this forum of student debt at the MACT. And it was just amazing. I mean, just even in this really, really tough economic time where this college has been cut 30, you know, the state support has been cut 30%, you look at the commitment of the professors and the instructors and the zeal of the students, and you just want to fight for them to have a real opportunity for success.
Randy, you write about, and we talk about this huge amount of money that we spend. In 2012, you're quoted as saying our total spending on higher education was $525 billion,
right,
more than twice what any comparable country spent that year. This was for 2012. You ask us, and what's the answer to this? We need to understand, where did it all go? Where did it all go?
So, you know, when you look at, in terms of just, you know, when you look at the K through 16 spending in this country, there's a whole lot of things that we spend money on that other countries don't spend money on. And, you know, some of it, when you do a dollar-to-dollar comparison, what do the other Western countries do? First off, healthcare and retirement security are done nationwide so that individual employers don't spend the funding on that. And when you cut that out, then you start seeing that we actually don't spend, particularly in high poverty areas, nearly as much per child as the countries that outcompete us. In wealthy areas, we do, but mm-hmm. not in high poverty areas. And in terms of colleges, what we're seeing is this. In terms of college spending, we have seen that the support, the investment in college education has been cut by over the last quarter century. What we used to do, and the GI Bill is a perfect example, is we used to find a way to make to support students going to college and to also subsidize colleges. So state after state after state would, in their university systems, would support and subsidize tuition. You know, I remember my parents and my friend's parents would say if they went to a state school, you know, and they got a job over the summer, they could afford their tuition.
Absolutely.
And, you know, in New York City, CUNY, free tuition. So what's happened over the period of the last 25 years is that college has become the lifeline, the ticket to even being able to vie for middle-class jobs. At the same time, as there's been less support for college education by the federal and state governments, and the cost of it has been rising, so now we have a situation of crippling debt, and not just of students that are in college right now, but we're seeing that people through their 60s, 70s, you know, when they're already members of, you know, when they're ready to retire, are still paying for their college debt. And so right now, student debt nationally exceeds $1 trillion
Incredible.
Bypassing credit card debt. And when you see Wisconsin, because every state has not handled this equally, Wisconsin actually, in the last 4 years, is one of the chief proponents of cutting affordability and cutting access.
Hmm. Tell me more about this, because I'm not sure I understand this element of all that we're talking about. The profits that have been taken by equity investors in for-profit institutions. I know that you had a report, The Hidden Costs of Financing U.S. Higher Education, that looked at that. I don't think many of us understand what that's all about, Randy.
So on top of, so there's two things. There's two intersections of Wall Street into this. There's actually three intersections of Wall Street. Intersection number one is that there are a whole lot of for-profit colleges that aren't regulated very much. And, you know, you see in Wisconsin, you see it all over, you know, these ads saying, come here. We'll use your federal, you know, your Pell Grants or whatever, but come, and we guarantee that you will get a job after you graduate. And, you know, you've seen those ads. I've seen those ads. And so what's happened is that the for-profit colleges are not regulated. Some of them are online. Some of them are not online. And then they basically, when a kid gets there, they say, okay, well, your Pell Grant is a little bit of your tuition, but your tuition is more than that. And people then pay for a lot of money. Sometimes they have the money. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes they borrow over their grants and aid and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens is a lot of them drop out. So they no longer they don't have a job, they don't have a graduate degree, they drop out and they have no other recourse. And so that is one of the places where there's a lot of private equity investment in the creation of these for-profit colleges and these online colleges that are not regulated anywhere. That's
mm-hmm.
number one.
Mm-hmm.
Number two is that and a lot of the loans that are taken out, even though, you know, the federal government is to some extent a direct investor, but there's other loans taken out, and Wall Street basically is the ones that provide the loans. So when the loans are at 6%, 8%, even though the cost of borrowing money is much less than that, then somebody's making that money, and it's normally Wall Street. Now, we have also, you know, we've also complained to the federal government when they're making that money, and we have actually fought with the federal government and said, you also have to reduce, you know, the money that you make on these on student loans. And in fact, that's part of the bill that Elizabeth Warren and others have tried to get through, but they've been filibustered and they have not been able to do it. And then
mm-hmm.
the third area where Wall Street makes a lot of money is that these public institutions are now trying to vie with the private institutions in terms of, you know, attractiveness for kids. So what you're seeing even like in places like Yale and Harvard and Cornell and many of the state universities, they're building new stadiums, they're building dormitories, they're doing a lot of what we call the do debt theory of public education or public higher education, and the debt service on that is something that Wall Street makes a pretty penny on. So they make the deals and they make a lot of money on it. So what you're seeing when you look at all three of these things is that Wall Street is actually making a lot of money on the debt that universities are carrying, as well as the debt that students are carrying, and it's been made worse because of the subsidies that have been cut to all of these public universities. So they get less money from in terms of being a public good. They can have less courses. At the same time, they're trying to vie with, you know, these private universities, and so they are carrying more debt and on and on and on. So it's a vicious circle, and that's how Wall Street, that's how Wall Street is making a lot of money on higher education.
Randy, it would seem to me, and we all know people who have had student debt for years and years, and it governs where they live and where they're going to be able to get married, or if they can get married and have a family because they have all this debt. If you have so many people, 40 million Americans saddled with this kind of debt, and a lot of debt, some of these people, it would seem to me as though this just can't be sustained, that eventually people are going to say, we just can't do this anymore. We can't have a society with our young people entering the workforce with that much debt.
So from an economist perspective, we had an economist on the panel, Professor Luz Sosa. And she basically told the panel that this is the next precipice for a recession for all the reasons you just said. So you think about it this way. The costs of higher education have gone up hugely. Well, let's start this way. We tell kids that higher education is very, very important. The cost of higher education, though, has become prohibitive. So kids are taking out more and more and more loans. At the very same time, as the job market is still not terrific and wages are stagnant. All of the factors are frankly going in the wrong direction. And so what's happening is that people have less buying power. And so you think about what that means for the rest of the economy. If you're making, say, you know, $500 a week but your student loan costs $100, then that's the first thing you're going to be spending. That's the first thing you have to pay before housing costs, before other costs and things like that. And if your student loan costs that much for the next 30, 40 years, you think about what choices you can make to buy a home, to have kids, and on and on and on. So that's why this is so – This has become not just a problem as important as it is for individual students. This is a national problem now. But the point is, it's worse in places like Wisconsin because Wisconsin also did the double whammy under Governor Walker of cutting K-12 spending, cutting higher ed spending, and particular cutting the spending at these technical colleges. So you have the double whammy of less courses, less subsidy, higher long-term, higher tuition, as well as the student loan crisis.
We're going to go to phone calls. Randy Weingarten is our guest, president of the American Federation of Teachers, and let's go to Stephanie in Middleton. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, and I appreciate you taking my call. The one thing I would like to address is the student debt crisis is frequently described in terms of young people being affected by this. I went back to school when I was 50 to become a social worker, and I entered a master's program. I had two girls in high school. The master's program had no room for me to work, go to school, and do my internship. So I had to borrow enough money to take care of us and pay for school. I graduated with a fair amount of debt, Now I have an astronomical amount of debt because of the interest rate.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 60 years old, and if I get really lucky, I'll be able to stay in a public job until I'm 67, when I'll have the 10 years of paying on my loan, and then I can ask for loan forgiveness. But then, magically, a loan turns into income, and I have to pay taxes on that.
Stephanie.
Oh, my God.
I went into a profession to do something good in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I take issue with the lady that was on the phone previously, Connie, who talks about kids going to school because they want fancy apartments and they want fancy football fields and they want fancy this and they want fancy that. I didn't go to school for any of that.
Well, I think some people do go to school for that. That was Connie's point, though, too. But what a situation Stephanie is in.
Right. But let's say, even if people went to school for fancy this, fancy that, fancy whatever, you know, they still, you know, in America, if you play by the rules, if you work hard and play by the rules, we expect, you know, that's the American dream, that we expect that people will be treated fairly. And so what Stephanie is saying is that, you know, what Stephanie, first off, I am so sorry, because Stephanie's went into the workforce again, or went in to get a different degree to make a difference in the lives of others. But what she's also showing is what's happened on both sides of this, with the disinvestment in colleges, that college could no longer afford to make sure that she could actually have her clinical experience, which was absolutely essential, at a period of time that she could take it. So it was such a Hobson's choice. And I go back to the 1950s, when people were coming from, you know, from the wars, from the World War II, Korean War, we had as a federal priority the GI Bill. We said that our GIs coming back, our returning vets, we're going to make sure the college was free for them, affordable for them, so that they could follow their dreams. And frankly, that's why this has to be a federal and a state priority to solve some of the problems that Stephanie has raised.
Thank you so much, Stephanie, for your call. Sherry in Whitewater. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen. This subject is near and dear to my heart. I have two kids that are in college, and most people don't realize that under George W. Bush, the interest rate was changed from 4% up to 6%, and now it's at 8.2% for many college loans. And as opposed to before, where you didn't start paying until you were out of school for 6 months, the interest, you don't pay on it, on the loan, but the interest starts compounding the day you sign the paper.
Mm.
It's obscene. And there may be a handful of people that go to school because they want to be somewhere fancy. I think most kids, including my own, are terrified because employment opportunities are so poor.
Mm-hmm.
And at least with a college education, the unemployment rate is closer to 4%. So, I mean, it does help. You may not be working in what you went to school for, but at least you'll be working. It's a very untenable situation.
Randy.
Yeah, no, your last caller is absolutely right. This is what I hear all the time.
Because
remember, we represent 1.6 million people, most of whom, you know, either want to go to college, have gone to college, sending their kids to college, understand the need for college or, you know, technical training, because that was the dream in America. America is very entrepreneurial. America is very creative. American people are incredibly hardworking. And so people understand that is, you know, part of the deal is to have, you know, a job with a significant or even a living wage. You need to have the skills and knowledge in this era that you can get from college. And it's become a terrible Hobson's choice. And that's why you have a lot of people nationwide who have taken this up. I mean, our union, I think we represent more college employees than any other union. But we hear this from our members, from communities, from kids, from families. And so it's not just a, you know, young kid issue. It is an American issue. And that's why we are taking it up full on and why it was so important to have this session at the Technical College today in Milwaukee, and but why it's an issue in all these state races and why it's a national issue.
So what needs to be done, Randy?
So I think there's three things that need to be done, and there's three or four things that need to be done. Number one, a very simple thing. Student loan debt needs to be able to be refinanced. So and one needs to be able to take advantage of some of the lowest interest rates in history and refinance.
Uh-huh.
And your last caller was absolutely right. The Bush administration did not only inch up the loan rates, but also had interest start from the moment you took the loan out, as opposed to when you had finished through college.
Mm-hmm.
And so number one, the Warren bill, the Corey Mason bill, all those things to try to help refinance are very, very important. Number two, we need to create more of an investment in higher education again and make it the public good that we say it is. And that means, states need to make this a priority, which Wisconsin has not done in the last few years. And Wisconsin, for example, preferred to give tax cuts instead of investing in its schools. Number three, we need to do something for this unsustainable debt that people now hold.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it's, tax credits or whether it's loan forgiveness or whatever it is, because that is a huge drag on the economy. What we are doing is people are on a hamster wheel, and it's untenable. And so that's the third thing that needs to happen.
Jim is our next caller. Sherry, thank you. And Jim in Winchester, hi.
Hi, Kathleen. I'm a retired University of Wisconsin administrator, and I will be the first to agree that it is absolutely too expensive for parents and for students attending college these days. But it's become expensive at the expense of those students and parents, because political games are currently being played in the gubernatorial race right now. So Governor Walker's out talking to university students saying, I'm in favor of freezing your tuition for the next couple years so that you don't incur so much debt. What student is not going to agree with that? At the same time, there's been this disinvestment. There is no investment within higher education. Faculty are being lost to the UW system as a consequence of other systems being more willing to invest in their professional careers. And as a consequence, we've got higher costs going through the system in terms of materials and supplies. Faculty are being paid less because their health insurance is actually costing them more. So they're actually experiencing a reduction in their salaries. There are choices that are also being made by parents and students that could be made in a more expeditious fashion, i.e., people could be choosing places that are not so expensive to go to school. And the one primarily in your backyard is the University of Wisconsin Waukesha, one of the UW College's campuses. Those places don't have football teams. They don't have football fields. They don't have Division I athletics. And as a consequence, they don't have state-of-the-art unions either. And as a consequence, the tuition is actually lower there. The fees are lower as well, student fees. As a consequence, students can start at a less expensive place and incur less debt initially. And it's really, when it really comes right down to it, it doesn't really matter where you started your college education. What matters is where you finished your college education, i.e., a student that wants to start at UW-Waukesha or UW-Marathon County or any of the other 11 UW colleges campuses can start there, and they can actually transfer to UW-Madison,
right,
and they have on the sheepskin UW-Madison. If they think that that's important for their employability, they can do it that way. But too often, choices are being made not only by the state, but by parents and students themselves that are actually causing higher debt.
Right. I mean, look, my sister, the last caller is totally right. We're New Yorkers. I went to the land-grant institution at Cornell University because I was able to
My parents helped me, go through college. I paid for my whole law degree myself. It took me, 20 years. I remember that last payment,
I'll bet you do.
And I love that. But my sister started, and my sister, who is one of the most amazing pediatricians I know, started at Rockland Community College. Mm-hmm. Your last caller is absolutely right. We need to elevate the community colleges. We need to elevate the technical colleges. But at the end of the day, and look, I know I'm a partisan. I know I am supporting Mary Burke. But it is pretty cynical for a governor to actually cut so much aid from these esteemed, fantastic institutions like the University of Wisconsin, and then say, while running for governor right now, oh, by the way, I'm just going to hold your tuition constant for the moment. And we know, even in Wisconsin, that the last time that happened, after the freeze was lifted, tuitions went up hugely. So let's do something, let's not let people run from their record. Let's do something real, which is solve the problem. And that's what the AFT, that's what we're pushing for, and that's what you heard at this great forum today.
Randy Weingarten, we have a couple more minutes with her. She is president of the American Federation of Teachers. I won't give you the number. We won't have time. So we'll take the calls that we have, and we'll do that in a moment on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Randy, here's a Facebook comment from Rich that has come in. I understand, he says, Oregon has recently had a proposal for reduced tuition rates prorated over a 20-year repayment plan. Is this true? Also wondering whether all countries, especially European universities and colleges, have bought into the American model of privatizing so much education.
Interesting. I was using the Germany as an example today because Germany actually has an industrial policy as opposed to the United States. It actually is trying to invest in manufacturing, create jobs, let the market do what the market does, but actually make sure that we, that the industrial policy helps make a robust economy, which is part of what we're trying to say here when we're talking about how we attack the student debt and the college affordability issue. And then someone said to me, oh, yes, and Germany also just made university tuition free. So it's going in, a different direction, understanding that if you want to have a robust economy, you need to really create the economic development and also the college affordability and access, and not just say to people, you're on your own. We need to create hand-ups, not handouts, but hand-ups to create the ladder of opportunity. In terms of Oregon, there is this notion called pay it forward, which some people really, really like, and it's essentially, and I'm very mixed about it, but there are people who really like this idea because it basically says you pay based upon what your income is going to be over the course of your lifetime.
Oh.
But the issue is, if you choose, for example, maybe you choose, to be a social worker,
right,
to be a police officer, to be a teacher,
mm-hmm,
and your, income over a period of time, as much as we fight to make it a real middle class income, maybe it is not, as much as you would want it to be, then that is still always, always a burden, going forward.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for all of your calls. Well, Randy, thank you so much for being with us. There are so many other things to discuss. I hope you'll join us again and we can just look at public schools.
That would be fantastic.
Good. All right. Let's do it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Randy Weingarten, our guest. She is president of the American Federation of Teachers and was in Milwaukee today at the VA because the union represents nurses as well. And she was at MATC, where there was a forum today looking at the growing crisis of mounting student debt and skyrocketing tuition. Randy is president of the 1.6 million member American Federation of Teachers, AFL-CIO. She has been deemed one of the most influential New Yorkers of the past 25 years and is on Washington Life magazine as as part of the 100 list of influential leaders. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this hour, and thanks to KP Whaley for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. Great conversations ahead. We're with you again on Monday next, and Craig Gilbert will join us. So much Wisconsin news as we're getting very close to some important elections in the state, so Craig Gilbert will be with us from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel for all things political, and that will be Monday at 1 o'clock, and I sure hope that you will join us. Thanks for listening. News coming up in a moment from NPR.